tsunami's back, bitches.
Took you long enough.
This has been an experience we will never forget.
This ain't no time to go all mushy.
Don't lecture me. I've waited long enough.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 445 of the Tsunami Escape Podcast. I'm C. Kohler, and with me tonight is Seda.
Hello.
Crocodile.
Hello.
And welcome back, BB Boy.
I am the Edge.
We'll get to that later, yes. Crocodile can't stay for very long tonight, so we really want to talk about Dandadan the most, because we're going to do a recap and possibly a ranking. But real quick, let's go into the news. The only item I had for the news this week was we did get some new footage and the opening sequence for the new Rooster Fighter anime that's coming out, I think, in April next year.
Oh, they gave a month? Okay, cool.
What are your thoughts on this, guys?
I didn't watch the opening, but I did watch the trailer. It seems I saw the English trailer. There was like an English dub trailer, which I don't know if that was like an older trailer that was just English dub this time, but that was the one I watched. And, you know, it's obviously a very silly premise. The rooster is voiced by Patrick Seitz, which seems appropriate.
Good choice.
You know, I don't know. It looks really silly. It's one of those things you just kind of have to roll with it. I don't know. I guess it's one of those things where it's like, how long does this gimmick, like, stay fresh? Like, what can they do with it? But, you know, I'll take it. It seems kind of silly, but I'll take it.
Yeah, I wasn't aware there was an English, like, full trailer. I only just saw the opening. I like the opening. It's certainly better than the One Punch Man Season 3 opening, but I guess it's not hard. It's not a high bar.
The low bar.
I don't know anything about One Punch Man Season 3, except I saw one person saw they watched it, and they were like, that was a mistake.
Yeah, I don't know why they just not dedicated the manpower, the resources, whatever you want to call it, to such an IP like One Punch Man. First season took the world by storm, but now they're just cheaping out on season 2 and 3. Just pay the money, wait till the good anime is around. I don't know. Like,
yeah,
the ology animators are getting super high quality animation, but One Punch Man can't. I don't know. Regardless, going back to Rooster Teeth, premise looks fun. I think it could probably last 10 to 12 episodes, which is what I assume the series is. I don't think it's a 2-core show. I don't know, but I doubt it would be. But I mean, yeah, chickens and fists and nose for Star World. I'm game for a season.
Yeah, it seems funny so far. Although, yeah. I seem to know Viz Media seems like betting big on it, since they seem to be doing quite a bit of promotions of the manga already.
I think I'm not sure yet. Like, I'm willing, obviously, to give it a chance. The promo looked kind of funny, but I'm like not knee-slappingly funny. But I don't know. There's a lot more heart to it than I thought there would be for this premise. So it could be good. And the only other thought I had was that, like, I like the CG animation in this. I tend to be a little more soft on CG animation than some people, but I think it looked fine. And actually, I'd take it the other way around. I'd go even further to say that I think the animation is of a higher quality than I was expecting. And when I look at people's responses online to this trailer, it's usually a pretty big mix of like, it's about time this was getting an anime. I can't believe this is getting an anime. And then a bunch of other people who are like, what the hell is this? What is this? So could be good. All right. Well, that's all we had for the news. I'm glad you mentioned the One Punch thing. I forgot about that, but yeah.
Oh, I will say, just speaking of good 3D CGI anime, the next season of Trigun has a real date coming next January. So if you're Trigun's fans and you've seen Stampede, I thought pretty great, check out Stargaze starting next year.
Is that Studio Orange?
Yes.
Okay, yeah, they're great. So
they're the best.
Agreed. All right, well, we've got a big Dandadan show to talk about, so we're going to lead off with that. So let's go into talking about the season finale of Dandadan. Dandadan, episode 12. Let's go to the cursed house. or I'm going to do a quick rundown. If I need to stop for some reason, just step in. So leading off at the end of the previous episode, they ended up bringing that female dummy home named Hana home with them. And like, they're begging Seiko to like keep it, like to let it live there, even though it's just a like otherwise lifeless dummy. That was kind of funny, but whatever. I guess it's a character now. Well, we'll see. It turns out that the golden ball that Momo saw in the previous episode wasn't one of Okaroon's. It was actually just a Christmas ornament, which is just, I think, just a joke. Like, okay, haha.
I mean, can't resolve that plot point too fast, right?
Right, exactly. Yeah, that's just sort of like a throwaway. Like, oh, no, that was a red herring. My notes say GG Okaroon antics. I don't know what I'm talking about here. I don't remember this.
Oh, they were trying to... Gigi was kind of being a goofball, kind of dancing around the room. I think he was singing either opening or ending of Slam Dunk. And then Okaroon tried to like one-up him. And then Gigi like tried to one-up his one-up. And they were just being like dumbasses, like silly dumbasses. And Momo was like, guys, like cut it out. You're being stupid. But in a funny way, but very, very stupid.
Yeah, thank you for pointing that out. I did see someone online post that they were singing the lyrics to the anime Slam Dunk, one of its openings, right?
Yeah, I didn't know that.
Super important popular anime. I've not seen it, but it's like iconic, like Dragon Ball tier anime in a lot of parts of the world.
Oh yeah, I've known about Slam Dunk for decades, but I've never watched it either because I'm not really into sports. But it's a very well respected anime back from the 90s. So.
The source material is from the artists of Vagabond, which is like one of the best looking comic books ever. I haven't actually looked at what Slam Dunk looks like in manga form, but I imagine it. Well, either it's kind of like the coming up of the talents of this artist, or its art's probably also godlike too.
The only thing I remember is that all of the dudes are like huge in that show, which makes sense. They're basketball players, but like they're like really proportioned to be huge.
And also the main character also has like orangish hair and is a total goofball, but the ladies don't mind anyways, which is rather unfair.
So we get a fun little sequence where the male mannequin named Taro is running through the school at night, but past a bunch of students who are like sneaking around, just having fun, on his way to go meet with his girlfriend. Turns out Momo decides to stay up overnight for him to arrive. And that's just kind of a fun little sequence. It doesn't really mean anything. It's just showing that he's going to keep doing this weird run that he does all the time to go meet with his girlfriend back at where they live.
He did get truck-cooned, but I guess being a non-living entity, he didn't get skied off to a new world.
They showed him pretty broken, but I guess it doesn't matter. He just like reassembles. And then like, yeah, it's more of a joke sequence than anything because he comes up at the very end and he's all like covered in bushes and stuff. And it's just like, anyway. However, we do see a quick shot of Gigi in his room and sitting up and he cannot fall asleep. He's got insomnia because he's so afraid of that thing he saw. And we get a brief shot of some kind of monster, the one that I'm assuming is haunting his house at home. The trio then take a train to go to Gigi's town. And all along the way, Okaroon is just super jealous of Gigi because he's so comfortable with Momo and so open and honest and goofy with her. And he hates being jealous. He even says that in her monologue. I hate being jealous. He's trying his best to step up. So he decides he's going to impress them with his knowledge of cryptids. And he breaks out this magazine and starts going over everything and trying to insert himself into a conversation, and he's just very awkward about it. To the point where he says, I'm an awkward guy, and then Momo freaks out. And I'm assuming this is a Ken Takakura quote.
Correct. Yes. Like, that's one of his famous lines from the real life actor. And Ken has said that a few times in the series, and every time he does, Momo's like gets flashes of the actual, or not actually, he's also Ken Takakura, but the actor, right. Ken Takakura. So that's why, of course, why is she doesn't call him Ken. She calls him Okaroon because she can't actually use his name because for that same similar reason.
Yeah, the same thing we've seen all along. She anytime she's reminded of Ken Takakura, she's just going like, goes crazy. It's kind of fun. They arrive in the town and then everything seems pretty normal, except we do pan over and we see a bunch of creepy old people watching them sinisterly, nearby.
Stand near menacingly.
Yeah. Commercial break. We come back and the guys are goofing off at home. Momo says there's nothing to sense. The demon or whatever must be gone. She can't sense it and decides, well, I'm just going to go to the hot spring. And she leaves, leaving Okarun and Gigi alone. And, you know, Okarun doesn't like this. Gigi doesn't care. Anyway, they decide to play some soccer out in the street. And they kind of start arguing with each other and battling to see who is going to win, who is winning when it comes to Momo's affections. I think Gigi just kind of straight out comes out, like, you like Momo, don't you? And it's just kind of, Okarun is struck by this. He's like, yeah, anyway. They kind of have a playful argument with each other. And, you know, and they're kind of angry, but not, you know, it's just sort of like jealous fighting kind of.
It seems mostly in like in good spirits. Like it doesn't seem like Gigi feels.
No, he doesn't Gigi feel definitely
either,
not.
He doesn't feel threatened by Okarun, but he doesn't also. He doesn't seem like entitled to Momo either. Like he, you know, he's Momo's friend, right? He likes her as a friend, and maybe even more than that. But he doesn't like come across as like she's mine, you know. So.
Yeah, I kind of got the impression, and I could be wrong, that he was more interested in just winning the argument in that moment and not so much about Momo's affections.
Yeah, like it's very teasing and playful, right?
I think that's the proper reader situation. Like, they're both getting competitive with each other and kind of letting it, you know, it'll spiral a bit out of control, so much so they're like fighting for love, so to speak.
Yeah, and Okarun is like obviously very serious about this because he's awkward and feels very deeply about Momo. And Gigi just kind of is a playful person who just likes just causing mischief. And that's kind of like he's just going into there. So, but anyway, regardless, one of them looks over and notices that for some reason there's a new part of the house that wasn't there before, that the house is actually bigger on the outside than it is on the inside. This is very awkward. I feel
like Gigi should have noticed that like a long time ago, and it speaks something that he didn't.
Yeah. Meanwhile, we cut back to the hot spring, and we see Momo is, you know, by herself there, but then a bunch of those old guys come in and start getting ready to get into the bath with her, and they point out the nearby sign, which is all rusted and hard to read, that it's a co-ed bath. But the scene very quickly turns quite creepy because the guys are talking about, don't you know what a crocodile is? And it's like, she's like, oh, you mean those reptiles? He's like, no, they're old men who stalk young women in onsens. And they're like coming at her.
Wasn't it gators? Alligators?
Or maybe, well, okay, sorry. I mean, everyone gets that mixed up. Thank you. It's a gator, but regardless, yeah.
I don't know. I've never heard of this phrase before. Obviously, I've never really been to a hot spring before, but like, oh, I guess it makes sense that they appear at like with their head above the water as a gator would. And like, okay, I get it.
Yeah. That's the way I took it too.
It might be a Japanese cross one too, but.
Yeah. And they're creeping on her to the point they just end up grabbing her and like pushing her under the water. I mean, it's pretty bad.
And that's where the episode ends.
Yeah, right. Well, there's one more scene. But it coincides with this moment, which is Okarun and Gigi go back into the house and they're looking around, and he gets like a sense of something behind the wall. He ends up breaking a hole in the wall, and we see into this passage where there shouldn't be a room. And there's this huge room, and it's all covered in these sort of paper. I don't know what they're called. Like
charms or whatever they are.
Talismans. Like
talisman charms type thing, right? And so obviously the evil that's been inhabiting the house, it must be in that room or something. And again, that's happening at the same moment that Momo is being like assaulted in the bath, and then cut to black. Okay, that's how you're going to end your season.
And then shiny end theme.
Yes.
Happy season one cliffhanger.
Yeah, it almost is better this time we didn't get the animated ending. It would have been even more off-putting. But I knew you guys were saying that there's going to be a cliffhanger ending, but it's not so much that this is a cliffhanger ending to me. It's more of a just like a thematic, like hit the brakes ending. It's just like, I don't know. This scene's a very odd place to end the season. That's all I'm going to say. So knowing that there's going to be more makes sense, but yeah.
Yeah, we're like 25% of the way, or maybe even less into this arc. So like, the next season picks up where it's right, you know, writing where we left off. We're still in this arc for a good bit, so.
Okay.
Yeah, it's likely more for, I guess, technical or scheduling reasons, or maybe they have scheduling in place being strict to this 12 episode limit, to, because otherwise, of the start's a few episodes definitely would seem like the better way to end the season, but it is what it is at this point.
I think that it wouldn't have been so jarring to me had they not included the Momo assault scene. Like, if they had kept that out and just had shown, like, the hole in the wall, that would have probably been a more, like, subtle way to end the season. I don't know.
You would rather they moved it to the next episode?
Yeah. If they had moved the assault and the crocodile or the gator scene to the next season, that would have been, I think, a little more way, like a much more, like, less abrupt way to end the season, is all I'm saying. Okay, well, let's go quickly over our thoughts over, let's talk, I'm going to go to each person briefly, and let's talk about the episode and then your overall thoughts of the season. And since you're not here as often, BB Boy, why don't you go first?
Yeah, I like this, both, I guess, the episode, like every other episode, I suppose. Of course, I read the manga, so I guess my perspective might be a little bit different and such.
Have you seen this before?
Yeah.
Airing on Toonami? Okay.
Even back in, like, Netflix and such. I don't have really anything substantial to say, because it kind of makes me realize, oh, okay, yeah. Because the episodes later on, there are definitely much more substantial things to talk about. Here, it's like, yeah, it's more like Dandadan shenanigans and such. So, well, the ancient snake thing, it's funny because of, well, I keep forgetting what it's called, but Metal Gear Solid 3 also has this ancient snake, and its remake came out this year. So, I guess it's the year of the Chibata or whatever, I guess.
What's the ancient snake? What's that?
I never able to remember what it's called. It's,
but no, I'm talking about in relation to the Dandadan.
Oh, they mentioned it back in the train and such.
It was on the magazine cover of the that.
Oh, okay.
It mentioned it was thing? Like a Harlem of the town they're going. Which, okay. Wow, okay, they don't show this until like next time. Funny, I'm just now realized.
All right, well, anyway, it was mentioned in the magazine, the cryptid that he was talking about, is what you're saying.
Yeah.
Okay. Crocodile, thoughts?
It was a strong episode. Obviously, yeah, it's not the first time I've seen it, but, you know, I thought it was a pretty strong episode. With the caveat that scene was a bit creepy, but I also know how it plays out, and it's Dandadan, so it's like, yeah, is that kind of creepy? Yes. Is it going to play out in a way that I think people will be generally satisfied with in the end, though? Also, yes, but that's, I guess, for tale for next season. I will say, having watched this again, there's a lot here that actually foreshadows lots of events coming up. Not an obvious, oh, here are some creepy old people, what are they up to? That's, like, pretty obvious they're going to be an antagonist or whatnot. But there are other elements that can kind of foreshadow over the course of even this episode and the previous one that really play out in the next few episodes. So I'd suggest, just before season two shows up, which will show up eventually, give this episode and probably the one before the rewatch. So I'll say that much. But obviously the ending was kind of abrupt. But again, I know what's coming next, so I can be like, it's not that big a deal. I guess I know what's happening next. But besides that, I thought it was another generally good episode to show. I thought that developing relationship between Okoroon and Gigi makes a lot of sense. Like, I think Okoroon's feelings are normal and valid because he's obviously in love with Momo, but he's like, I'm fighting against a childhood friend. That's like, you know, it's a real sentiment that happens both in real life, but, you know, a lot of anime, but it's also like a real life thing. Then they're kind of like bonding. Like, he doesn't have a lot of guy friends, but he's kind of making one because Gigi's kind of like dumb and lovable and weird, but, you know, still lovable. And the characters, I think it's just continuing trend of Dandadan, where the characters you think they're going to be one way and they have their kind of like tropes they're inhabiting, but you get to learn more about them. They're like, oh, this character should be the most annoying person in the world, but they're actually like kind of fun to hang out with, and I could see them being my friend actually. And so it continues that trend of the show, of the series. But
yeah. By the way, Were you adamant that I refer to those guys as gators because your name is Crocodile?
No, I just thought I remembered they said they were gators, not crocodiles. So
okay,
that was really random.
I'm just joking.
Cross my mind
joking.
At all, but okay. Like I don't
know. It kind of occurred to me when you were talking. Seda, what are your thoughts? And again, it can be on the episode or the season.
As for this episode, I think there are two parts of it that I really appreciated. You mentioned one of them. Well, we really talked about both. One, like this would have been, I would have had a totally different like perspective on this character stuff. If, how do I put this? I really liked that Okaroon said, I'm being immature and I hate it. Like he perceives that. He acknowledges that. Like, had he not said that, I would have seen this differently. Like, I would have thought like you're being, you know, immature. Like I would have thought that, but the fact that he recognizes that himself and he says he can't help it, like, oh, okay, that makes me feel a little differently that he is being a little bit immature, but at least he, you know, he recognizes that and he's at least maybe trying or going to try, like, not being immature. So I appreciated that he was, you know, like self, you know, reflective of himself. And then the other thing was, like, I appreciate that Gigi is not, like, a bully, whether intentionally or unintentionally. Like, I could easily have seen this being, like, oh, like, I'm, like, you know, you're stepping in on my relationship with Momo here. And he kind of, like, teases it in that way, but it's not, like, he's also very friendly towards Okaroon. Like, he's the one, like, hey, like, he just sort of out of nowhere, like, hey, you play soccer? Let's play soccer, right? So he's, like, being friendly, and he's, you know, trying to cheer up Okaroon, even if he teases him. And I could have easily seen a character like that being a little bit more like standoffish, like, you know, more of a bully. So those two things, I think, like these character relationships that are growing across our core cast here, and we were only just introduced to Gigi last episode, I think those help a lot in terms of endearing me to the characters. So for this episode specifically, those are the two things that I clued in on.
I mean, the thing is, I think we see a lot of what you're describing in a lot of other shows where it's like someone's being an immature, like, twat, and like maybe like you could kind of justify it, but they're going so far over the edge that it's no longer like realistic, but it's more like just annoying. And then, of course, there's also the trope of like, oh, I'm the old squeeze, or I'm coming back from the childhood friend. I'm not gonna making my move now. Like, those are all things we've all seen before in lots of media. Sometimes it's executed in a way that's still entertaining, but a lot of times it's just kind of obnoxious. But here's a show that like acknowledges them, but then kind of moves in a different direction.
Right.
It kind of reminds me a lot of Hunter x Hunter, where like you think you know where things are going, but then they go in a direction you don't expect, and you're like, ah, that was cool. I like that. That was better than I thought it was going to happen.
As for the ending of this episode, it honestly doesn't like bother me at all that they ended the season on a cliffhanger and then I have to wait. Like, I honestly don't care. Like, sure, why not? We'll wait till season or episode 13, which I'll watch in a year from now. Whatever.
Yeah. Overall, I would say that I really enjoyed this episode. I wouldn't say it was like my favorite episode of the season, but I thought it was really good. I find Gigi a very compelling character. I don't know. There's a lot I like about this. And as far as the overall season, Don to Don has thoroughly impressed me. It falls into those shows to me, like, and this is probably going to influence my ranking somewhat, but I feel like it falls into a show like Licorice Recoil or Gundam the Origin or something like that, where I'm like, I didn't think I would like the show. I just thought like it'd be like a mid show to me, or it's just sort of like an average show, but then it like impressed me how good it was. So I was like, wow, this is really, really good. I actually enjoy this a lot. Kind of the point where I realized why it's popular. So all right, well, we've talked our bit about the show. How about we do a quick ranking? I'm going to give you guys a link here.
Do you have the updated ranking list this time?
Yeah, I think I do. I just created this spreadsheet. It's a copy of the last one that Grex had. So this should be up to date. If you have a way to tell, let me know. But this should be the copy of the one he had last, I think.
What was the last show we added, Lazarus?
I don't know. That's a good question.
Yeah, like I don't think anything ended since Lazarus. Oh, yeah, Lazarus is on here. So
I think this is up to date. So All right, so here we go. Everyone got the list?
Yeah.
Okay. BB Boy's like, oh god. Crocodile, you can see it?
Yeah, I can see the list, yeah.
Okay, everybody take a moment, kind of think about where you'd like to put it. Obviously, don't say anything. And obviously, just go with your gut, and then we can adjust it, so. I'll say that I think I have a general idea where I'm going to put it, so.
I'm just really invested in it, and so.
Well, you can rank it as high as you want. You can rank it number one. It doesn't matter to me. We'll talk about it.
I do think it's better than common side effects.
All right. Well, again, pick a number and let me know when you got it. All right. What? Well, where are you at, Seda? Have you given it?
I'm ready.
You're ready? Okay. Everyone type their number in?
Yeah.
Okay. 3, 2, 1, enter. All right.
I think that's actually one of our closer voting spreads that we've had.
Pretty good. So I'm going to go over the numbers real quick here. Not surprisingly, BB Boys are the highest at number 12, which puts it basically where Common Side Effects was, just below JoJo's Diamond is Unbreakable and above Dr. Stone. Next up would be Seda at 16, which puts it below Samurai Champloo and above the Origin, Mobile Suit Gundam. Crocodile is right at 17, one right after that, which puts it just above Licorice Recoil. And I had it at 18, which puts it just above Golden Wind. So we're pretty close.
I'll admit, I didn't even look down the list because I was just paying attention to both Attack on Titan and JoJo Part 4.
Okay, so those are the shows you most associate quality-wise as being similar to what you're interested in with Don to Don.
JoJo is like the historical contemporary to Dan to Dan. And so I'll admit, I think this season Dan to Dan is better than JoJo Part 5. Okay. Quantifying JoJo itself because of its parts is definitely like it's most flexible, but also makes it difficult to I guess, compare to others. I guess
you could say. Not for me. I mean, I got to admit, I find it very easy to separate the JoJo's. Some parts are less interesting than others to me. So.
This is actually Gene how Araki like separate them.
Yeah, has each story be its own? Seda, what are your thoughts? You had number 16. Any reason?
So, like, I think everyone, we all understand that this list is kind of an awkward list because it's like a cumulative aggregate of various people's opinions. And, you know, for everyone, there's going to be some show that, like, that show should be higher or that show should be lower or whatever. But it's like an aggregate list, right? And it's also, like, crafted over years. So, like, opinions might vary or change. So we understand that. But I think in terms of, like, trying to place it, you know, you find shows that you think it's similar to or, you know, in terms of how much you liked it or quality or whatever, that you're like, okay, I liked it less than this, more than this, and you place it there. So that's fine. So like I was looking down the list and I get to like that block around like 16, 17, 18, 19, like Mobile Suit Gundam, like Curse Recoil, JoJo, Paranoia Agent, and even Samurai Champloo at 15. I'm like, okay, all these shows I like quite a lot. They all have some things about them that I'm not so fond of, but all of those shows are like shows I could recommend to pretty much anyone, if they have like a little bit of anime experience, like, yeah, you should watch Paranoia Agent. You should watch Licorice Recoil. You should watch Gundam The Origin. And if you're going to watch any part of JoJo, Part 5 is a good one. So Down and Down kind of felt like that to me in terms of like, I could recommend this to anyone. There are parts of it I don't like, mainly how they treat Momo at the beginning and at the end, and maybe a few other things. And like, you know what? So it's in that block for me. And when I put it above Gundam, see, I don't even remember where I put it. Yeah, I put it right above Gundam. So, you know, I just that I was just eyeing a block and I put it there.
Okay,
I think it was slightly stronger in Licorice Recoil in terms of just like the overall. Like, it doesn't have like a strong villain really, like Licorice Recoil did. Obviously, that was like a full show. Really, I know it might get another season, and this one isn't yet. But I felt like some like the more main plot stuff is more interesting in Don to Don, even though it's less. I don't know. There's just a few things that I think Don to Don has the edge.
Yeah,
I love Licorice Recoil too, a whole lot. But I put Don to Don this season, Don to Don above that.
Crocodile, you're kind of in the center here.
Well, for me, it was pretty easy, actually. It was like, you mentioned Licorice Recoil. I was like, oh, yeah, that was a show you saw recently. Do I like Dendon more than Licorice Recoil? Took me about 2 seconds to answer that question. Yes. I like how do I like it compared to Mobile Suit Gundam? Took me another 2 seconds. I like Mobile Suit Gundam more. That was my spot. And it was pretty easy because, like, it could go down the list and be like, yeah, we could debate, is it better than Golden Wind? Maybe, maybe not. Is it better than, I don't know, like Soul Eater? I don't know. But, like, that's debatable. But, for example, like, Dr. Stone was, like, a hard cap. Definitely worse than Dr. Stone. So, like, yeah. Nothing can't go above that. So, it was just like, yeah, I think that was pretty easy pick for me. You mentioned Licorice Recoil. I remembered it. I thought Domino was better. Yeah,
I wish I hadn't said that. I think I feel like I did influence you guys, but I shouldn't have said that, but maybe not. I don't know.
I don't remember you saying that.
Okay, good. Okay.
Even if you didn't say that, it would probably be like plus or minus 3 from that range. Like, Dr. Stone would be hard cap, and then, like, it's definitely better than, like, Made in Abyss. So it'd be like, maybe I'm fighting out Soul Eater or Golden Wind or something, but, like, it was probably going to end up somewhere around there no matter what.
Well, I'm going to say that I agree with what you said about Dr. Stone. I can't put this above Dr. Stone. This is a better made show than Dr. Stone, but the characters in Dr. Stone are the best thing. It's got one of the best casts ever, and I can't put it above that. Although I like the cast in this quite a bit.
Well, the Dandelion cast is great, but I've just seen like 3 seasons or 4 seasons of Dr. Stone, and we're only evaluating 1 season of Dandelion here. I've seen the second one, but even still, Dandelion's cast is actually quite excellent, but Dr. Stone is another tier. So
yeah, it is a definite higher tier to me.
Well, they also shown less characters in Dandelion. Dr. Stone does have the advantage of having
having more characters. Would be Bleach would be like number 3 or something, and that's, you know, just having more characters.
Bleach is clearly number 1.
We are referring to the quality, and yes, Dr. Stone has the quality in its numbers compared to most shows.
Yeah, like the characters all in Dr. Stone, with maybe the exception of one or two, are all very strong characters that are very likable and endearing, and you enjoy them. And every time they come on screen and have something to contribute, you're invested. Unlike a show like Bleach, where it has a million characters and most of them are forgettable, you know what I mean? That kind of thing.
Yeah, so Dr. Stone just has a quote-unquote unfair advantage over Dandadan. That show also has a much better cast, but it also puts that same amount of effort to a lot of its characters, basically.
So I would argue that we need to definitely keep it below Dr. Stone, a higher number than that. So that would mean, BB Boy, you're probably going to have to relent a little bit. I think we need to kind of get it around that 17, 18, 16 area, probably, because that's where the majority is.
Yeah, like I would put Shampoo still above it. I think it's around, obviously where I put it is where I think it should go, so I guess that's not really saying much, but yeah.
Does anyone want to make a case for it? Let's start with Licorice Recoil. How many of us here think it should be above or below that?
I think it should be above Licorice Recoil. Licorice Recoil, I think it's like ending soured me a little bit. Like, it wasn't a bad ending.
Just kidding.
Yeah. Like, not even just the whole, like, just kidding, it wasn't a terrorist attack type of thing. But I don't know. Like, I just felt like the ending was a little bit less, I don't know. It didn't really work for me. It was kind of plain. Like, I don't even remember what the dude's like. What his ultimate motive was off the top of my head.
I think rule the truth of the world or something.
Right. Is that it? And I don't know. It was just kind of like not a bad ending.
Wait, hold on. Is it okay to qualify the climax as the ending and the Hawaiian scene, which is technically the ending, as?
Well, I just meant the story ending. I didn't mean the
post. The climax, basically.
Yeah, when I meant ending, I just meant like the ending of the main plot line. I know there's a little bit at the end where they're like in Hawaii.
Resolution.
Like, yeah, right.
Yeah, okay, yeah, sure. Okay.
I meant the story plot. The plot kind of just like, okay, that was it. Sure.
So that's a down for you on that. So.
Yeah, I mean, I think Licorice Recoil is good. I just think Dandadan. Now, obviously, we are arguing a show that is clearly ending on like a cliffhanger here. I know Licorice Recoil, it might have they confirmed a second season? I feel like I keep forgetting if they have.
Weirdly coy about it. Like, feels like they should have been like more, I don't know, kind of, but like, who knows? But they had those short stories, but I guess we'll see in a year or something, or I don't know.
So anyways, my point is Licorice Recoil, for the most part, is a complete story. I know they can continue it if they want, but it's done. Where Don to Don is clearly not. So that's not really a fair comparison. But I just think Don to Don, I just think at this point, I do think it's stronger in terms of its, you know, the writing and whatnot. So it's just a hair. So,
well, I would say it's better in the right. I think the character writing in Licorice Recoil is strong, but the plot writing is very weak. And I think Don to Don is kind of hard for me to categorize it. It's kind of just like an ongoing. Yeah, it's a kind of an ongoing adventure. And the thing that really I find, I agree with you that I think it's above Licorice Recoil, because Don to Don to me feels so different than most shows I've seen. And I want to give it kudos for that. I want to like celebrate the fact that this show is awkward and different in a way that I like.
We should also mention just briefly that it's also extremely well-produced show. Like Licorice Recoil is also a looker, but Don to Don has some really sick like art, background work, animation, all that jazz. Like Science Sir really knocked out of the park with this adaptation in that regard.
They certainly did. I would say that A1 Pictures work on Licorice Recoil looks great, but it is also very of a style.
Yeah.
That it doesn't change. Whereas Don to Don is very experimental and does lots of interesting things. Okay. I guess you guys agree with that. Okay.
Yes, yes. Oh, yes. Sorry. Yeah. I agree.
I mean, they have to. It's to get on the manga's level anyways. I mean, I'll admit, I guess most people didn't notice a lot of the giant monsters were CG, and it was all right, I suppose. I was surprised what they pulled off season 2, but otherwise, yeah, it's Science are overall knocked out of the park visually.
Well, let's ask this question. Would you be willing to put it above Origin?
I disagree.
Okay. Everyone else?
And others can disagree with my disagreement, but I'm just stating.
Yeah, I want to get everyone's feel on that.
The Origin is not something I'm... It's funny, because if I say personal investment or whatever, it sounds like I got some bias going on, but...
I've kind of soured on Gundam a bit overall recently. Okay. Not having to do anything with new shows or anything. I have not watched G-Cucks. I have not watched Witch from Mercury. I do not care. I have just soured on Gundam completely, and I think that influenced my decision.
Why did you sour it if it's not like what did you watch or not watch that made you sour in it?
It's not necessarily a show that soured me. I just, yeah, the whole thing.
I mean, that's fine. I'm just curious why you didn't just thought about it more and like, you know what, that show I watched a while back that was kind of sus. Is that what you felt?
Maybe. Yeah. I just, yeah.
Recency bias wore off, maybe.
Maybe.
No, it's fine. Like, I'm not trying to give you crap for it. I'll just
I don't know if I have a definitive reason why. Basically, at the time, I've had a hard time getting into Gundam. Like, and I watched like the original series. I watched Zeta. I watched, you know, Iron Blooded Orphans, and I watched, you know, a couple of the older ones or whatever. And I just like never really clicked for me. And then Origin did kind of click for me more than other shows did. And then I kind of thinking back on it, I'm just like, actually, I don't know if I liked it as much either. So I don't know. Gundam and me just don't gel.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you on that. I think Origin was really well made, and it's probably my favorite of the ones I've seen, with Iron-Blooded Orphans coming in a second with being very, very, very lower than that. But I don't think I've seen any other Gundam that I've actually been drawn to. So I would argue that I think I would be willing to put Don to Don above the Origin myself.
My mind wants to put it Dan to Dan below it, but my heart wants to put it above it.
Well, I think you should vote with your heart.
Okay, I'll put it above Origin.
Yeah, I mean, again, this is a feelings thing. This whole list is nothing. We can try to rationalize it with logic, but at the end of the day, it's just your personal feelings. So,
because the thing about the Origin is that it probably wouldn't be a bad show, because it's so reliant on politics, if it wasn't for the fact that essentially shit happened, like a lot. Like the stakes are always high. You keep wondering who's going to die. Mm-hmm. It's like, it's just kind of relentless. It's just that, hell yeah, there's consequences all in regards to all this talking and ordering compared to many other things that often get bogged down by all fictional red tape, but then like nothing really a lot happens. So Yeah, it's that would mix Origin must watch television. Basically, it's just saying whether Dastardly Shit Char as the Maul's gonna pull off next. Even so, you could all spend multiple minutes talking about politics, the space politics. Plenty of viewers probably can't even follow, but so other than in other heads, it's like, yep. So, yeah.
Well, it's great. Great production values were the really thing that I took away from it. So,
yeah,
I will say the Origin is also kind of has a more serious tone than a lot of other UC Gundam. I mean, there's a lot of seriousness in UC Gundam, but there's a lot of silliness, which probably is some of the stuff that turns Seta off. But like, I do think the Origin's more serious tone is definitely to its benefit.
And I don't want to keep going on. We should probably end the conversation on Gundam here, but I will add one more thing real quickly, just because I think it's funny and relatable. And I never say this. I've never said this. I've tried to get into Macross before. And with the exception of Macross Plus, I've never been able to get into it. Like, I saw like Macross Frontier, and like, the music stuff, like, I don't know, I just couldn't get into it, but whatever. All right. I'm assuming you guys don't feel confident about putting it above that, though, because Champloo and Primal and Dr. Stone are probably our upper end of this range. What do you think? Obviously, I don't want it to go above Dr. Stone. I don't care as much about Primal and Champloo as most people do, but you guys might feel more strongly about those.
I don't think it should go above Champloo. That's like my ceiling.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, Primal is probably too high, but like Champloo, I would say is above Dandadan right now.
Like, I'm like full in for Dandadan than I ever been with Sandwich Champloo, and yet even I feel like shouldn't be above Dandadan, shouldn't be above that. Like, yeah. I don't know. I think Champloo just, even so it's not as good a show as Bebop, it also still like withstand the test of time, and also yeah, it's
exactly
just such a one of the coolest things ever made anyways, which, yeah, Dandadan is also one of the coolest things ever made, but it's also like the current coolest thing ever made right now. So
I would say that I would be probably going to put Champloo as my limit as well. I wouldn't put it above that. And I don't even really am not that big a fan of Champloo, but for what you just said about the fact that it has stood the test of time, it is a classic. And so for me, yeah, I'm going to not put it above that. So I argue that we should probably put Dandadan season one at number 17. Below Champloo, but above the Origin. What do you guys think?
I'm going
to put it at 16 to do that?
Yeah, that'd be 16.
16. I'm looking in the wrong column. Yeah. Sound good?
You know, the average score scores is 15.75. So that works out too. So
cool. All right, cool. So Dandadan, season one only so far, is ranked number 16 out of the 95 shows that have aired on New Toonami. So pretty up there in the top 20.
Yeah.
Strong start.
Getting close to 100 shows since New Toonami came back.
Yeah, we will definitely reach 100 shows, I think, at some point. I mean, we know of at least...
Daima ending. We have, you know, Bleach and Blue Exorcist.
Rooster Fighter is coming. Yeah,
we are getting another. It's already on the ranking list. So we're not going to add a new ranking, but we're going to get another season of Ninja Kamui. Remember that?
Oh yeah, that's right.
Oh yeah,
that's happening.
It's fun. It's funny that show is super polarizing online. I see a lot of people who really like it and a lot of people who really hate it. Yep. So it's interesting.
Well, it's better, I think, to have polarizing opinions than being like no one gives a shit or no one remembers. Like, does anyone ever remember?
Yeah, everyone forgot.
Yeah, no one remembers Fena. Like, so.
I remember Fena more than I remember Dimension Something.
Yeah. That's just lower tiers of forgetfulness. Random aside, apparently the person who made Dimension W also wrote Clevetus, which is actually a really great dark fantasy anime, and I think would actually be pretty good for Toonami if it ever came to it. So that person, whoever the manga is, made a pretty big turnaround at least, and kudos to them, I suppose.
Cool.
We're way off topic now, but I remember Dimension W, the anime, like rushed through a bunch of stuff. It might be better in manga form. I don't know, but
it's funny because I get the impression Dimension W is forgotten, but also the manga also lasted for like a decade or something.
Wow.
Like,
okay.
Like, it's nuts.
My feeling on that though is that I'm actually kind of shocked to hear that there is a manga.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
At least it gave us a nice opening.
Oh, yeah, great opening.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, but I do have to head out. It's great to talk to you guys. Don Don is great. Hopefully get season 2. I think it was 9 months from the Japanese premiere to the Toonami premiere. Hopefully it's only that much till you get English Don Don on Toonami for season 2.
Yeah, someone keep an eye out when the Blu-ray comes out. Maybe that has to happen first.
Yeah, that would be helpful because we got the Blu-ray cut for this airing, so it'd be great to have that for season 2 as well. But yeah, anyway, great to be with you guys, and I'll see you guys next week. Have a good night.
Take care.
Stay gold.
All right. So that, it took us about an hour to get through that. So let's go ahead and move on. And we're, like I said, we're going to backtrack and we're going to back to Daima real quick. So let's begin with Dragon Ball Daima. Daima episode 17, Goma. Quick rundown. Arnsu wants the demon realm to rule all others. So this is her wish. This is what she wants to wish for. She wants to make the dragon realm more powerful than all other realms or something to that effect. She's a megalomaniac sort of character, I think. And she proposes a challenge that...
One thing, real quick, sorry. Like, just jumping in here. Like, Arnsu also said... she wants the outside world to tremble, and then someone mentioned something like what about peace? And she called peace disgusting. I wrote that down. She doesn't like peace. She wants conflict and power.
Yeah. I don't think my megalomaniac line is really doing it justice. She comes across like, I don't know, like a battle hungry ruler kind of character. So she proposes that someone fight Do. In order to, and whoever wins that gets all the Dragon Balls, to which I think Piccolo says, hey, well, we got two of them. We're not risking as much or whatever. And she says, well, if you don't do it, I'm going to destroy the Dragon Ball, to which I went, you can do that? Okay. I don't even know if she can, but anyway, Goku decides he's going to fight. There's a big battle with Doo. And I'm going to be honest, the remainder of this episode looked great, but this Goku versus Doo fight was pretty tepid. It was just sort of like, whatever. Didn't really look as good as some of the show has normally looked.
It had some fun choreography with Goku and his power pole and Do with his like stretchy arms. But it definitely doesn't stand up to the Goma fight later in terms of animation.
Yeah. I just felt like the animation here was weaker than what we've seen in even previous fights. So just wasn't great. Not bad, just wasn't great. Anyway, Goma arrives. He breaks up the fight. This is the super powered up Goma. He still has his goofy head, though. It's like a giant goofy head. Commercial break. We come back. We learn that Goma is using the third eye, which we learn the name of is called the Tertian Oculus, which I just think means third eye.
Yeah, they actually mentioned that earlier. Yeah, Tertian Oculus is literally just like another fancy way to say third eye.
Yeah. So Goma has used the third eye and he's using it to fight, but he's also using it to create a giant fighting arena in the air. This is basically the same thing that happened in Super. They just make a giant fighting arena so that they don't destroy the castle. And then we get like the remainder of the episode almost completely. It's just wall to wall, everyone ganging up on Goma, trying their best to fight him. And he's just super, super, super strong. Everyone cooperates, including the Majins. They go in to help as well. Everyone's kind of doing like combined beam attacks and everyone's using everything. They're pulling out all the stops and
even the one Tamagami's helping.
Oh yeah, that's right. Yeah. And there's like a funny scene where Neva, he
does like the eyebrow raise, like whatever you want to call that gesture where he's just like, come on, you can go. Like,
He doesn't say it. He's like, huh? And then the Tamagami's like, what? And anyway, it's kind of goofy, but yeah, he basically sends him in. So they're all fighting. Animation here is some of the best that's happened, I think. I mean, it just looked really good.
Yeah, I kind of expected, I mean, not necessarily this level of animation, but I kind of expected eventually there would be like an everyone versus Goma type of deal going on. I wasn't expecting it quite yet. We still have like 3 episodes left. So you know, obviously a lot can happen in three episodes, but yeah, this whole second half of this episode, the best this in terms of animation, the best this series has looked, you know, just all out, you know, yeah. They put everything into this.
Looked phenomenal. And anyway, Goma's beaten everybody, and then Goku's like, all right, I've got to really bring it. And he goes into Super Saiyan 3, and that's where the episode ends. He's got his eyebrows are gone, and his big hair is there.
Yep.
So that's where we're going to start out the next episode with Goku SS3.
Don't look at gaming news for Dragon Ball FighterZ. You'll get spoiled.
Is Goma in that, I guess?
No. They just revealed a new character for Dragon Ball FighterZ, who is from something we have not seen yet in Daima.
Oh, okay. I'm going to assume some kind of combination. Okay. I don't want to know, but I'm assuming that. Yeah, that makes sense. Okay. Interesting. I'm for that.
It's kind of funny. It's coincidentally funny timing, because that was just announced like today or this last weekend. So
yeah, it was announced at Evo France, I think.
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay.
So don't look.
Yeah, I won't. Actually, I mean, I can hold off. I actually own that game, and I played it once. And I because I don't like fighting games, but that game was so beautiful. I was like, I'm going to own this.
just for the look at character it. Animation.
Yeah. Just to look at it. It's so great. Anyway, this episode. Yeah. Good episode. I like this one more than the previous one, mostly because I feel like the animation was just so top tier, and it was exciting, and I thought it was great. And yeah, I like that we're in the final boss now. So pretty good episode.
They're at the end game now.
I was expecting some sort of twist, but I wasn't sure if I was expecting just Goma to break up the Majin Buu fight, and then the Majins are just like, we're going to help you out now. Like, I expected there to be some sort of wrinkle in the formula, and like, it wasn't just going to be, let's defeat the Majins, and then let's defeat Goma. I figured there'd be something. Like, I wasn't quite expecting Goma just to appear in this episode and be like, it's my turn now.
Yeah, it's interesting, because I feel like if they beat Goma, they still have to kind of deal with Arensu to a certain extent. So, all right. Anyone else have any thoughts about this before we move on?
Yeah, when I watched this, it was like, oh, wow. The animations towards the end were like really stepping up, and like everyone's powering up. And it was actually oddly feeling inspiring, I suppose. Feel like Dragon Ball is like reaching, like accomplishing its potential. At least it's the feel of it, you know? This is why we watch Dragon Ball, you know?
Yeah, I will say that I feel like this has probably been one of my favorite Dragon Ball shows, mostly because it's more about the adventure than the fights, even though I thought this fight was fun.
I think it was always going to end in a fight.
Like, yeah, Dragon of course. Ball.
But I think the overall show being a little bit more of that adventure vibe is definitely appreciated.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, well, three more to go, and then this show will be ranked as well. So, all right, let's move on to Bleach. Bleach, The Thousand Year Blood War, Core 2, Episode 7, I Am the Edge. So I have to ask right out of the gate, is this the origin of the term edgelord?
I don't think it is the origin. I think it's just like being edgy was a thing. You know, if you're just like, if you were, I don't know, a little bit disobedient or whatever, like didn't play by the rules, you were edgy.
I'm kind of half joking here, because this character they introduce in this episode is what I would call an edgelord. He certainly fits that bill. But before we get to him, we cut back to the scene we ended with the last episode with, where we see Yachiru and that other lieutenant woman are being attacked by the guy who introduced himself as Sternritter V, the Vanishing Point. And he has these really powerful powers where he has the power to erase things. He has three ways he can do it. He can erase you. I think he can erase. I don't even remember, because it's not important.
Yeah, he very quickly goes through his powers. Like, I can erase your sense of self. I can erase your sense of presence or something. Like, oh, whatever.
And I can erase myself from your memory, that kind of thing. And at the point you're thinking, wow, this is pretty strong. But Yachira uses her Shikai to defeat him. You know, like he ends up getting beat down by her.
Yachiru kind of, you know, when she was first introduced, it was sort of meant to be like, you know, big guy, small girl kind of pairing, where like it's just a weird opposites. Like obviously Kenpachi's lieutenant is going to be just like this little girl with pink hair who's kind of a, you know, just a hyperactive whatever.
That sort of
trope has been played before, big guy, small girl, right? But in this fight, she kind of has like similar like approach where she like goes purely by instinct in a way. Yes. So it's like, oh, I can, you know, a little bit of Kenpachi kind of, you know, coming through there.
Awesome. I was actually kind of shocked at how like capable she is. Maybe I shouldn't have been, but she was like really strong. And I'm like, it just belies her like appearance and her like mannerisms where she's all so cute. But yet at the same time, she's like, I think even the Sternritter guy is like mentioning like, oh, she's scary. And it's like, yeah, she is kind of scary actually. But turns out she beats this guy. And then this other guy appears nearby and his name is Gremmy. And he's like talking to the little gremlin guy. And he's like, oh, well, you did a terrible job. I'm going to erase you from existence. And like snaps his fingers and the guy explodes. And we learned that the first Sternritter we saw, that wasn't a real person at all. That was something this guy created, Gremmy. And it turns out Gremmy is the real Sternritter V. He's not the vanishing point, but he's the real Sternritter. And he has the power of imagination.
This is actually a pretty fun power. I'm going to nominate it.
I am too. I think it's pretty great. I think woefully underused in this battle by pretty much everyone in the thread being like, this is what you come up with. But I actually was thinking during the show, like, how are you going to beat this guy? Because anything he imagines becomes real.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, he starts out by turning Yachiro's bones into literal cookies, and they end up just crumbling in her body, which is kind of gruesome when you think about it. Just her bones are just breaking because they're made of cookie. Again, that's kind of like that first move is sort of enough to just be like, damn, you can kind of do anything. Anyway, Kenny arrives, and he cuts him. And that's when we learn that Gremmy is the real Sternritter V. But Kenny starts doing some damage to this guy. And the guy's like, I'm not going to go too much into it, but the guy's basically like, oh, I never have to fight anyone. I don't fight people. I just, you know, win battles because I just imagine myself winning, which is another like big like question mark. It's like, if you can imagine yourself winning, how do you lose? I don't get it. But I do have to mention, and correct me if I'm wrong, was that Aizen who was watching from afar?
No, there is a Sternritter who looks a lot like Aizen.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I've noticed he's been around. He hasn't like done much, but he's got that same little like clump of bangs that like you know, same color hair, and he's got like that little like I don't know what you call it, but like that bang that goes over his forehead that looks similar. Like, oh, okay.
Okay, well, that's much more believable, because I was like, how did he get out? But
no, Aizen is still in the cell, as far as I know. And I know through osmosis, he does something eventually. Gotcha. I don't know what exactly. Something with a chair?
I thought he might have broken out during the whole catastrophe happened.
He might have at this
point. Well, that wasn't him, though, is what you're saying.
There's a Sternritter who looks kind of, I think it's just like a mangaka, like same face thing here. Like he created a different character, but he just looks so much like the other character, you get confused. But no, I actually thought that too for a moment when he's been in other episodes. Like, that's not Aizen, right? And it's not.
Okay.
Now this Grammy's power is like, I like obviously in terms of like pure logic, it's a little bit like maybe underused. Like, how do you lose? But I do think this just in this quick one episode fight, there's just some like oddball out there things that he does. Yeah. Like he like pulls up like at one point in the fight, he like pulls up like, I don't know, 50 machine guns and just starts blasting. And it's just like out of nowhere. Like that's mm-hmm. that's totally ridiculous, but it's like, sure, why not? And then he's like, I'm going to create a meteor. I'm going to create a gap in space. And it's just kind of like, okay, this is like way out there, but like, mm-hmm. why not? If it's power of imagination, sure. So that's why I said it was fun. Like, logic, but like, how does he lose? Like, maybe that's a little bit hard to believe with this power, But the just a few things we see in this one episode is just kind of like, that's, you know, it's just like, you can do whatever you want. Like, sure.
It's okay. Fun. It's fun. I do kind of question, like, the moment he sent Kenny to space, I'm just like, well, how did he get back?
Kenny is just so determined,
though. I guess. Yeah. I mean, like, when he broke out of, like, the cube of water that was floating in the air, I'm like, okay, I can kind of get that. But, like, he was sent into space, and then he's just like, oh, I'm right here again. I'm like, what? That should have beaten you. Anyway, V here, Grammy, is like, he finally starts to go kind of crazy because he's like, Kenpachi is so powerful and so cocky that it's actually changing Grammy. And he's like, for the first time in my life, I want to kill someone. And so he tries really hard. And that's when he does all these moves you're talking about, which all, yeah, they're all very cool. But then he says, I know one way I can beat you, Kenpachi. I will make myself stronger than you. And so he, because he can imagine it, he starts to become stronger than Kenpachi. But what he doesn't realize is that his own body isn't powerful enough to hold the strength of Kenpachi. And so he ends up, like, destroying his own body because of that. And then we see at the very end of the episode during the post credits that he was just a brain in a jar. He didn't even have a body at all. I think he belongs on Futurama or something. And yeah, that was a pretty edgy episode. What'd you guys think?
It took me a second to place it. And I was just watching this episode. And I'm like, I like the voice of this Grammy guy. Who's that voice? It sounds familiar. It's Okaroon.
Oh.
Yeah. Same, okay. It's AJ Beckel.
Okay. Yeah.
It took me a while to place that. But like, I eventually was like, oh, it's Okaroon. Just really insane now.
Yeah. Yeah, I think overall I like the episode. It was fun
This is one of those things where it's just like, this guy's power is so unbelievably stupid, and Kenpachi is just like unbelievably, like literally unbelievably, like he can just beat anyone anytime, all the time. He's just the most powerful thing ever, and it's just like, I could even beat the vacuum of space, and I'm just like, sure, why not?
Yeah.
Try to put any logic into it, and it's not going to work.
Right. I kept thinking the whole time, it's like, how is he winning? And I couldn't figure it out. I still don't think I know how he's winning. He says it to a certain extent in the episode. He's just like, it's like, I'm just that strong or something. And I'm like, well, what does that mean? You're going against the laws of physics here, buddy. But he can do it, I guess.
So at the end of the episode, Kenpachi says something like, you envisioned me as a monster and that's why you lost. Maybe I'm looking too much into this. I don't want to think about this too much, but it's almost like, it almost feels like, you know, that thing where it's just like, don't think about, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
And of course you're going to think about it. And it's like, don't think about Kenpachi being unbeatable. And now you thought about it. Now he's unbeatable. Like, it's like kind of that.
Yeah. It's like Ghostbusters. They accidentally summon the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man because somebody thought of it.
Yeah, don't think about anything disgusting. Like the most disgusting thing you can think of. Don't think about it. And like, now you thought about it or whatever. Yeah, in this case, that's the only way I can.
I get it. Oh, I get that. What I couldn't get was how he kept winning throughout the fight. Like, I don't know. I don't know. Like you said, like when he went to space, I just like, at that point, I'm like, how does he, what? He just comes
back. He's just
back,
so determined. Like, yeah, Kenpachi's just so determined.
Did he cut a hole in the fabric of space time with his sword? I mean, like, what did he do there? I
don't know.
Also, was his sword was like super huge at the end. Is that normal?
Here's the thing. This is what I remember from Bleach. I might be wrong. So a lot of people, or a lot of the Soul Reapers in Bleach, have a Shikai, which changes the shape of their sword, and it's not like the Bankai, which is like their ultimate technique, but it's like every character in Bleach has a Shikai that kind of changes how their sword like behaves and look. Like, for example, Renji's like long weaving blade sword or whatever, and whatnot. But Kenpachi's thing, like in early Bleach, was he was so super strong, and he didn't have a Shikai. Like, he was just super strong, just using a normal sword with no Shikai. So I think his sword turning into like a big cleaver, I think this was supposed to be like a fan service thing. Like, that's what his Shikai looks like. Finally, after hundreds of episodes, we finally get to see what his Shikai looks like. don't even think about what Kenpachi's Bankai looks like. You know, who knows? So I think that's what it was. It was like this was the reveal of his Shikai.
Well, it makes sense too, because he just recently got a power up by beating that one woman. So yeah. Any other thoughts about this, BB Boy? Do you have any thoughts about this episode?
So, years back, I guess it was like, I don't know, it was Man God or someone else who like him. This image, I guess, when like all those edgy shows were on Toonami, like posted in, I am the edge, and I can learn it. It was like from Bleach, and this was back when there was rumblings of how potentially bad this current arc in the manga is after the show, the anime, was canceled. So, and then I've used it, and others have used it to use anything of like bad edgy entertainment sense. So years comes by, I watch the Thousand Years Blood War, having a great time, believing or thinking that Bleach has been back. No, I'm being entertained by this. And then there was an unexpected thing. The greatest twist of all, the most unexpected thing imaginable, was those words popping up on the screen. Because you see, before that, I didn't have no clue what was the context to I'm the Edge, other than just assuming of years of being the context of something being bad. But having this title card, find out it's even the episode, it's like a chapter or a title of whatever is going on, to be related to like the best character in Bleach, and then what proceeded after, seeing all that Kenpachi awesomeness, that was when I really, Bleach was really back.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, so the moment they announced like the Bleach game, I was like, oh god, please have I Am the Edge be like Kenpachi Super or something. Of course, the Bleach game turned out to be not something one would have hoped. But anyways, basically, I'm really glad I Am the Edge turned out to be actually the context of something good and not bad, essentially.
That sort of reminds me of like a different show. Like, I had a friend who knew the phrase, if you die in the game, you die in real life, but they didn't know where it was from. It's Sword Art Online, obviously. And like, that would almost be like, unless you really like Sword Art Online, like, oh, that's where it's from? Ew. Like I Am the Edge. I don't know if I Am the Edge is necessarily from Bleach, but like, if it showed up in the manga years ago. Yeah, I know.
It's the worst part is, when I typed out Toonami on the reset arrow, they literally cut the title card out. It was supposed to show up, but it just immediately cut to like a commercial break.
Yeah. So what he's referring to for our listeners is that they didn't show the title card in the episode on Toonami. Yeah. They didn't air it, because I didn't see it either. I'm seeing it now for the first time in a GIF that Sadus posted in our chat. So yeah, that was unfortunate. Yeah, overall, I thought it was a pretty fun episode, mostly because of the crazy power that was demonstrated here. And I like Kenpachi and I like Yachiru, both of them. I think they're kind of fun characters. They're like so over the top and like oddball that I just think they're entertaining. They're not what this main bad guy watches, which is what I often relate to Bleach being, is a bunch of like super serious emo battlers where it's like, oh god, just go away, you know, like a Sasuke type character. These Kenpachi and Yachiru are also goofy and like fun and like super strong, and I like that. So all right, two more shows. Let's go on to Blue Exorcist. There's Yachiru doing an amazing move now. Oh yeah, she did that dance too. That was funny. Blue Exorcist, the Shimane Illuminati arc, episode 8, Determination. Quick rundown here, and stop me if you need to, but Gedoin meets Lucifer. So I'm surprised he didn't already had met him. So Lucifer's up and about. asking Gedoin what's going on. I guess Gedoin's responsible for healing him. There's a lot of Gedoin in this episode, and it's hard to watch.
Do we know why Lucifer is, like, sick?
No, I don't think they've mentioned it. I mean, I don't know.
No, like, either they haven't said it, or I totally forgot.
I don't think they've said
it. He's like deathly ill to the point where later in the episode, I'm jumping ahead here, he like starts bleeding from his eyes. That doesn't seem good.
Well, he even says that. He's like, it's thanks to you, Dr. Gedoin, that I was able to stop bleeding from my face. And I'm like, damn. I don't know what the deal is with him. Anyway, he says that, Gedoin and other people are like, Gedoin's like, I've got all these people trapped, including Rin, the son of Satan. And Lucifer's like, oh, well, you can't kill Rin. You're not allowed to do that. We can only do that with the approval of our father, Satan.
And if I remember correctly, though, he kind of says, like, we can't kill Rin, but I can take out Yukio, even though Satan will get mad. Like, okay. Yeah. Because Rin is, I guess, older, so he's more important.
This is what I've talked about before. I've talked about this before. So Rin is the son of Satan, but then
Yukio also is the son of Satan, but he's not as important.
Yeah, he's like also,
in terms of being Satan's spawn, he's not as important, I guess.
Yeah.
Not saying he's not an important character, but in terms of people don't think of him as Satan's spawn.
Right. Or they don't know. I can't really tell. It's not clear to me what his deal is. But anyway, this gets Gedoin really mad. And also, by the way, he's trying as hard to like impress Lucifer. But then that woman who's like Renzo's superior keeps talking. Every time she talks, we have to listen to an inner monologue of Gedoin being like, fuck you, bitch, you stupid bitch. You're like, blah, 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 like going like that. I mean, he does. That's what he does. He's like, shut up, you cow.
Yeah, and this woman, obviously she's not a nice woman, but she's not like, she's just being very like, she's being like an army sergeant, right? She's just like very like to the point and like, yes, sir.
She's not malicious. This guy is this guy's the worst. Yeah. I hate him. Anyway, okay, he hates that woman. And let's see. Renzo gives battle advice. What am I talking about there? I don't even remember that. Battle advice. It's like, I don't remember that. That's a bad note. I don't know what I'm talking about there. Anyway, we learned that Izumo apparently isn't compatible with the Fox Demon. Apparently, she used to be like 30% compatible, but now they tested her. They just tested her, and it turns out she's like 0.08% compatible now.
It's because she gained friends.
Yeah, probably, or something. Yeah.
It's not explained at all, but like...
Could be. Could be that. Anyway, Gedoin's like, I don't care. We're going to do the experiment anyway, even if it kills her, because of course he's going to do that. He's Gedoin. He doesn't care about anybody. But then he's also like, but I got to do something to impress Lucifer. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to have Rin killed, but make it seem like I had no choice. Like Rin was escaping and then the only way to stop him was to kill him.
And then he has this imaginative, hypothetical that he thinks up where he's like, He envisions himself as like a pretty boy, which is obviously the opposite of what he is. And he's like, oh, Lucifer, I'm so sorry that I killed Rin. I had to do it. And his imaginated Lucifer is like, oh, that's okay. You have performed a great deed or whatever. He's like imagining this in his head, which is, just working all the more to make this guy as despicable as possible.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, it's supposed to be kind of comedy, but I'm just sort of like, oh God, stop. I don't want to see that. Anyway. So all of the rest of the kids are down. Each one's in like a separate little room. Oh, go ahead.
Before that, there was a comment that I wrote down. I forget if Lucifer said this or if Gedoin said this, but they said that Tamamo created chosen ones like Toto. And it showed Toto, like a figure of him. And it showed like two other shadowy people.
Mm-hmm.
So there was like two things I took away from that. One, like Toto was somehow created by the experiments that have been being done on Tamamo. Yeah. Like that's new information to me. Like Toto before was just like some exorcist that joined the Illuminati and like, I guess, has risen through the ranks and he now has Phoenix powers, but I guess they call him a chosen one.
And yeah. They mentioned that in the previous season about how he has like,
yeah,
a demon within him or something.
Right.
Or half, and he's half demon. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause he had that like demonic like transformation. And so like they, yeah, Yukio mentioned that he's never seen a demon like that before. That's what you, I think Yukio said that he's never seen a demon like possession work like that. So there's something weird about Toto, and like, are there other people like him? It seems, cause it showed like chosen ones, like there's more than one, so they can introduce another character there or whatever. I even asked in a previous episode, I'm like, I wonder how Toto fits into all of this, because he is an Illuminati. He's not like present at the moment, so I don't know what he's doing. And then the other thing was, like, I guess Tamamo is like responsible for this in some regard. I'm not sure how that works.
So I, like, thought it was Gedoin who did it. You're saying it's Tamamo? No,
they said Tamamo was created, was responsible for creating chosen ones, like, or at least the experiments on her. So yeah, I don't know how that works.
Okay. Oh, I didn't know that. I'm glad you mentioned that, because I thought it was just, he was just another Gedoin experiment. Okay.
I mean, I think that's both true. It's like a Gedoin experiment that Tamamo might have, you know, contributed
done
to.
It. Okay. Okay. So anyway, all the students are trapped in their own individual cells, and then gates open up and these crazy immortal chimera mutant things attack. They're like mishmashes of multiple people into like a huge zombie form. They all start getting attacked. We get a scene with Konakomaru where he has to like convince himself, and he literally says this out loud. It's like, I am not a side character, which kind of made me laugh because it's kind of fourth wall breaking.
Yeah,
he is a side character, but he's like, I am not a side character. I have to be strong. And he's like, what is my point? And then he kind of realizes what people told him, that he's like, you know, the strategist. And so that's how he comes back and wins. He ends up outsmarting the mutant thing.
Well, he doesn't necessarily win. He just escapes.
He escapes. I'm sorry. He defeats it by getting away. Yeah.
But even Yukio is like, well, you escaped, and that's better than what I did. I mean, I just fused this guy to the ground. Like, oh, okay.
Yeah. This, by the way, there's a trend here, as you'll see in a moment. None of our good guys kill these things, by the way. I think they made it like perfectly clear that there are lots of opportunities for them to kill these things, and nobody does it. Rin just says he can't do it.
What did Shemmy kill hers?
Now that's a good question. I was going to bring that up. So Shemmy wakes up and she's being, you know, hung in the air by one of these things, and then she used her little leaf guy. Yeah, and she ends up escaping by making a giant tree or something. But yeah, it's insinuated that maybe she did kill hers, which I don't think she did, because that goes against what I was saying about, like, apparently the good guys won't kill these things. Because I think these are obviously just, like, people who've been transformed, you know, and it's like, that would be, like, bad for our good guys to kill these innocents. But they kind of do insinuate that maybe Shimmy killed one. I don't think so, but maybe.
Yeah, I'd have to rewind.
By the way, there's a whole scene where Bon talks about being a dragoon and he has like a bazooka.
Yeah, it's kind of weird, to be honest.
Yeah, it's weird and kind of pointless, because it's over in like a matter of a couple of minutes. Like, apparently he spent like years and years of his life building up the muscles to wield the bazooka. And then he turns out he's like, I don't need this.
I feel like if this is going to be part of his character, shouldn't they have introduced some of this in the previous season?
Yeah. That's why I feel like this is pointless, because it comes up now, and then it's also kind of resolved now, because he's like, by the end of the scene, he's like, oh, I guess I didn't need that, because he ends up just like performing a prayer. Oh, and by the way, all the monsters start talking, which is yet another reason why I don't think our good guys can kill them. They're like, I want to go home.
They're clearly humans that are, you know,
Gedoin experiments, more
victims in a way.
Bon doubted himself. Anyway, I think Konakomaru looks up and he sees that Renzo and Gedoin are up there, but mostly Renzo is looking down on them, kind of watching them from afar. And then at the end of the episode pretty much ends when Rin busts everyone else out, who's not gotten out already. And everyone's kind of like out of their cages now. I'm on the fence. Like, what are they going to do with this? Is Renzo just a villain now? I mean, I kind of feel like that's where we're going. I don't know. He's showing way too many villain tendencies here, unless he's under some kind of mind control. I don't see how you're going to redeem
him. In this scene, Renzo, he says something like, he almost seems like he just doesn't care about anything that's going on right now. He almost is like antagonizing Gedoin, like unintentionally, he's like, "Hey, are they supposed to escape?" And he, and then Gedoin's upset, and he's, and Rando says something like, "I'm not trying to rock the boat. I'm just, this is just what I see." Like, he doesn't care that they escape. He doesn't, like, he's not like rooting for them or saying like, "How dare they?" He's just like, "Oh, they escaped." Did you notice?
I think
that?
It'd be interesting. It'd be interesting to go back to like the first season and see what his personality was like. Because was he always like this, or is this something I'm only just now picking up on? You know,
I think he was always like the flirty type, and but as we know, that was mostly a face.
Yeah. All right. Any other thoughts about this episode? I thought it was all right.
I'm just waiting for Gedoin to get his comeuppance.
Yeah.
And I'm also waiting for, I really hope Izumo gets to do something. Because she, obviously she's like a damsel right now, but like,
yeah,
you know, I hope she gets to do something.
Yeah, well, yeah. It's funny, we have all the like Dead Rising jokes from like last week. And here, for me, it sort of resembled more like the way the breakouts with explosions and with guns and whatnot. It's like, and then like the jet and cage monsters. It was like, okay, this is now starting to more resemble like, like the Resident Evil 4 style of games now, especially with like the breakout into like the industrial looking laboratory and such, prison laboratory, prison thing, such. So I wonder what other Capcom horror video game will remind me next week.
Yeah, lots of zombies suddenly in this show about, you know,
the devil.
Feels like it's kind of conflicting. All right, well, let's finish off this episode with an amazing filler episode of One Piece. One Piece episode 748, an underground maze, Luffy versus the tram human.
Oh my
God. So this is a whole episode dedicated to the worst devil fruit power. Maybe not the worst, but it's up there.
Anyway. I will say that this, for once, this One Piece episode title checks out. That's what happened. That's what it was.
They didn't like talk about what happened in the last 7 seconds. It's the whole episode. Yeah. So we learn this train guy, his name is Avalon. He literally starts out the episode by going, choo-choo! Like, he's literally saying that out loud, verbally. And thank you for BB Boy for posting this GIF from the 1980s cartoon Turbo Teen, of which I'm well aware of. Yeah, this guy is very much like Turbo Teen. All right, anyway, he ate the roll fruit. He basically acts like a conductor. His gimmick is that he's always talking like a conductor would talk. So he's always like, please mind the gap as he, you know, jumps or something like that.
Or like, next stop, get off or whatever.
Yeah, next stop, Luffy's face or something, you know. Meanwhile, Bill is up in his throne room and the other three sweet pirates come walking up there. I'm like, oh no, we can't help us. Desire has fallen into the chasm. Help us, Bill. And Bill's like comforting them. He's like, it's okay. She'll be fine. He doesn't do the laugh, but that's basically what happens. Desire hates Barto for leaving. So basically there's a lot of Bartolomeo and Desire arguments here. She blames him for leaving when they were early pirates back in the East Blue. And then we get a flashback.
Her backstory is really kind of very straightforward.
Yeah, go ahead.
Like, I was with my pirate crew or whatever, and literally, we took a wrong turn. Literally, that's what she says. Like, we must have took a wrong turn, and then gets blasted by some unnamed random ship, and she's like, I lost everything. That was it.
Yeah. And then Bill just happened to come along and rescued her.
Yeah.
Okay, Bill attacked her, right? That's what happened, right?
That's what it seems like, although, yeah. Like, I don't know.
I'm pretty sure. No, I mean, like, I don't know this, but like, come on. He destroyed her. This is probably what happened. He destroyed her crew so that she would feel grateful. And then he basically gets her to work for him. And that's like,
that was it like worth it? Like, she's trying to kill her now, apparently.
I don't think. He just doesn't care. I don't know.
Yeah,
he's like cheap labor to him. You know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway. Yeah. He. By the way. Yeah. That was also revealed in this episode that he is trying to kill him, or he's ordered her death, basically. Anyway. As they're wandering through the mines down there, which also have all these rails everywhere, because if they didn't have these rails everywhere, I don't know how Choo Choo Man would be able to get around. We see some former Silver Mine Alliance members who are down there mining. They're forced to mine. They're slave laborers. They explain that Bill is a bad guy and that he wasn't happy with them, and so he forced them to be his slaves and mine down there. And they explain that Avalon has been told that he is to kill Desire as well as the Straw Hats. Anyway, Avalon shows up to kill them. And there's a wacky set of adventures where he's doing all sorts of goofy stuff and Luffy's doing goofy stuff. And somehow Luffy continues to keep rolling onto the tracks conveniently in Avalon's way. I mean, this power, this this roll fruit is so limiting that he can only use it when he's on a railroad track, that the characters actually have to accidentally fall onto the track to be of any threat from this guy. It's pretty bad. It's just goofy. Anyway, this is like the most fillery thing ever. And then Luffy breaks free. Oh, he gets drilled by Avalon with a big like Gurren Lagann drill. But then this only gets Luffy to break free. And he and Bartolomeo team up and defeat Avalon. Although I really question whether Luffy needed Bartolomeo's help to do this, but nonetheless. Oh, also Bartolomeo got his hands clean, so now he can cross his fingers and use barrier and all that stuff. So, and the episode pretty much ends there with Avalon being defeated.
Yeah, and they show Bill and that other guy, whose name I don't know. Bill, they say that Avalon's been defeated, and Bill starts like angrily chomping on coal or whatever.
Yeah. And he's just like, he kind of smiles at the end. He's like, ah, that's all right.
Oh, I think it's coming back to me. He says, like, we're going to bury them.
Like, oh, yeah.
I guess the plan now is just to bury the mine shaft or whatever.
I think Bill here is the genius that Bill is, just making all this up as he goes. He doesn't know what he's doing.
I mean, that's the mind of the King of the Pirates works in mysterious ways.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah. So, BB boy, how long do you think it'll take until Bill becomes King of the Pirates?
I can't even think of a joke.
How do you respond to this question?
Yeah. Oh, you could just say like a week, or you could say never, which is the real answer. Yeah. I will say that the more I see of this filler, the more I realize I must have skipped it, because I don't remember any of this. And I'm sure I would have remembered this Avalon character, as bad as it is. Because this is like, to me, I think so far out of all the devil fruits I've seen, I would say probably the jacket fruit is being like the worst devil fruit ever. But this is also like right there on that level of being just about the worst you could have.
It almost feels like in the One Piece world, not being able to swim is almost worth it if you get some cool power. In this case, it's like, no, it wasn't. No, I would have taken the power to swim versus being a train man.
It's pretty bad. I get it. Like, I'm sure there was like a meeting where the filler writers were like, okay, we've got to come up with some kind of filler arc to promote film gold. Oh, I got an idea. We'll have the villain be silver. Oh, okay. But what kind of pirates would he have working for him? Well, he's a miner, a silver miner. So he would need someone like mine carts. Oh, what about a mine cart devil fruit? And they're like, oh, that'll be fun. And then they make it and they're like, oh, this is bad. This is a bad idea.
It's supposedly they're still making a show for children. I guess they were open.
Yeah, maybe.
They won't notice the absurdity of it.
It just seems like also like oddly specific, like a train man. Like, how does that naturally even exist? I know there are other devil fruits that also don't really make sense, but this especially so.
Yeah. Yeah. It's pretty bad.
Like, what if what if you found this devil fruit before trains were invented? Like, how would that work?
Well, we don't know enough about how devil fruits work.
What is the origin of devil fruits? Now we're really getting deep.
I will tell you this, Saida. This discussion has come up in the manga.
Yeah.
But it's vague at best, and I don't want to talk about it because it happens like years from now. But but anyway, I will say that, like, I wonder what the devil fruit looked like. You know, did it have like a chimney coming out of it or something?
Little chimney stack. Yeah.
Anyway. Okay, I'm gonna rate this as this was the worst episode of the week. It was bad. Bad stuff. Like, it was like sometimes I like to watch things that are bad because it's like funny, but this was so bad I was just kind of like, why just end already? This is bad. It's embarrassingly bad. I like making fun of Bill though. Okay, so that's it for this week. I guess we should talk briefly about flavor alerts.
Play flavor alert.
Potential award nominations.
I have two. Best power, like power of imagination from
Power Remy. Imagination. Yeah. Okay.
Let me. What is his name? I'll see if I can.
It's
find
Remy
it.
Something.
Remy?
Yeah.
Oh, it's Grammy.
Grammy. Yeah.
Grammy Thamo.
Well, here I'm about to type it in. So just how do you spell it?
I'm gonna put it in the chat so you can.
Okay.
That's how you spell it.
Cheat.
Oh, so it looks like Grammy like the M-E-A-U-X, which is sort of like that O sound. Yeah. Like Grammy Thumo. I don't know.
Okay, and it's just called Imagination.
I don't know if he has a. Okay, I'm on his Wikipedia page. Does it like name his power?
Is he the V? He is still the V though, right?
Yes.
Okay. Because when the little dude announced himself, it's like, I'm V the Visionary.
Yeah. Oh, that's, I guess. So, yeah, it just calls him the Visionary. And I'm looking at his Wikipedia page. It says, has the ability to turn fantasy into reality. And I guess I remember this. The Quincy powers are called Shrips instead of Bankais.
Okay.
But, like, it doesn't have, like, a name. So, yeah, just imagination.
So, okay.
I guess.
That's good enough for me. And what was the other thing?
Worst character, Avalon. Does he even count as a character?
Well, that's good enough for me. That's pretty good for me, yeah. I didn't type it right. Hang on. But yeah, he's like, when your character's so bad that it's like, why you question whether they should exist, I'm willing to put them in that list. One Piece. That's the third One Piece character. Yeah, it's pretty good.
Best fight? Goma versus Z Fighters. I know it's like not over yet. So should we?
Yeah, let's wait and see how it turns out. But I would say so far it's in the running.
Yeah, let's wait because there's a lot that can happen here. So we don't want to jump the gun.
Yeah.
If there's like if it ends up being like Goku versus Goma for two more episodes here, and maybe it'll kind of like supersede it. We'll see.
Oh. Yeah. Just looking over the categories here.
I was wondering, like, best fight. This fight with Grammy and Kenpachi, maybe not best fight because of what we talked about in terms of like logic. Does it actually even make any sense? But I think just we kind of account for it with the best ability.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we do that nomination instead of best fight.
Yeah, I'm with that.
Okay.
Again, I think the power is cool.
Like, yeah, I think it's a utilization of it.
Yeah, I think the guy unfortunately didn't have good enough imagination. I think he could have done it better. And also, I mean, and for what it's worth, it was his downfall. Like, the crux of his power is that it can be misused on himself,
right?
Because he doubted himself. So, yeah.
Like, kind of by definition, if you have the power of imagination to do whatever you want, you kind of have to beat yourself. Like,
right.
There's no other way anyone else could beat you.
I mean, it was like a god level power. I mean, when you think about it. Well, there was one other. It did have one other weakness, which Kenpachi pointed out, that he can only affect one person at a time.
Yeah.
Which I didn't understand that because I thought he wasn't affecting people. He was affecting reality. So, but he was
I think that's why we shouldn't put it in like best fight. Cause it like some of the utilization of it is a little bit like the trying to apply logic to it is weird. And this will probably hurt it when we come down to voting, like this power.
Yeah.
Is it actually one of the best powers if it's kind of weirdly utilized?
What, how about, I don't know. That was more of a joke. I was going to say worst moment, Geta wins fantasy. But it's not that bad. All right. I'm not coming up with anything else. There's not a worse design.
I'm like, was there anything in Dandadan? Like, do we want to vote? Did we already vote Gigi as a character?
I don't know. I don't think we did.
We did not. Like, I'm cool with that. Are his two episodes good enough?
I think so.
Sure. Yeah.
I think so. I think he's a really strong character. I like him. He's made a strong first impression.
Yeah, not good enough to win the category, but good enough to get a nomination.
You know who's not in the best female character category that should be? And that is Seiko.
Oh, yeah. I'm kind of surprised she's not in there.
Yeah, she needs to be in there.
I think we had her for voice, but not that. Yeah.
I like her character. All right. I guess that'll be it then. If you think of anything else, we will talk about it next week. We do have one more week where we're going to have a normal, semi-normal schedule.
We have two Blue Exorcists now.
Yeah.
For one week.
And then the following week that's the marathon, right?
Yeah, but we still have Daima and Bleach.
So what do we think we want to do here for our show?
So I think next week we'll do a normal episode. We'll just have four shows instead of five with double Blue Exorcist, right?
Yeah.
And then the week after that, maybe we'll hold off because we'll only have two shows. That's what I'm leaning towards is normal episode next week, and then we'll skip a week.
I mean, it'll make that next week, the following week, probably longer.
Yeah, it's a double-edged sword. Like, we're going to have do we want to just do a short episode or just one episode of Daima and one episode of Bleach? We could.
It might not be a bad idea. I mean, I'm open to that if you are, because I feel like we could knock it out in like 30 minutes, you know, and be done.
Sure. Quick. Actually, yeah, I take back what I said. Might just be fine just doing a quick show.
Yeah, we'll do a quick show and then just get it out of the way. And that way the next show after that
isn't super long. So long. And I think the next show after that is like the ranking of Daima. So it's going to be long anyway.
Oh, that's true. Oh, yeah. All the more reason. Okay. Well, yeah. So like I said, next week we'll be back for episode 446, where we will have a somewhat normal schedule, except for the double Blue Exorcist. And then the week after that, we'll do a very short episode. Anyway, but that's it for this episode 445. Thank you very much for being here, Seda.
Yep.
And thank you for being here too, BB Boy.
No problem.
And thanks, Crocodile, for being here earlier. And that'll do it. And until next time, later.